Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Alan Zaremba, and he'll be answering your questions on Florida's exotic peacock bass. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Alan a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now while you're listening to the show. We'd surely appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted as the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Alan Zaremba about Florida's exotic peacock bass. Enrico Puglisi flies pride themselves in creating unique and one-of-a-kind flies and fly tying material. Enrico has been experimenting with durable synthetic and natural materials to create flies that catch fish for more than 30 years. His innovative products, including brushes, fibers, and components, have made a major impact on the direction of saltwater fly fishing, and his methods and materials are respected worldwide. Whether you want your flies hand-tied for you or you would like to tie your own, be sure to visit Enrico Puglisi Flies and browse through their online catalog. Visit epflies.com and do a little shopping today. Again, that's epflies.com. Before we introduce Alan, I'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Alan's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that Al and I have talked about during the show, and then you just have to submit your answer along with your name and your location using that text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills. Take notes, pay attention, and all that stuff, and hopefully you'll win that book courtesy of Stackpole Books. Our guest tonight is Alan Zaremba. Alan was born and raised in South Florida, fishing the many canals and lakes throughout the area. This led to his professional fishing and guiding career in 1986. Alan specializes in exotic species, mainly peacock bass, which led to the travel side of his business, which he started in 1997, traveling throughout the jungles of South America. Fishing is and always has been his full-time job. You can learn more about Alan's trips at worldwidesportsfishing.com. Alan, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Great to be here.
Great to have you. And thanks for joining us tonight. Surely always appreciate my guests and their vast amount of knowledge, and I know you have a lot to share with us tonight, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, hopefully I can enlighten everybody.
Yeah, that's the idea. Teach us about peacock bass. That's the whole idea. So, you know, tell us about how you got started with fly fishing and peacock bass. I know the history is maybe a little bit longer than the fly fishing part, but yeah, tell us how you got into fishing.
Well, I grew up in Miami, and growing up in that area, we had canals and lakes all around where we lived, so it was kind of a natural thing to fall into that, and that's probably what kept me out of a lot of trouble as I got a little bit older, and I have no complaints. It's been a great life for me. I've got to do exactly what I want to do, and the peacock bass was just something that I actually was like everybody else. I read a little article in a little paperback magazine that was put out in, I want to say it was 1987. And I was already fishing for bass and fishing tournaments and stuff like that, but was not really doing the fly fishing at that time. The fly fishing came along a little bit later, and I admit it. Peacock bass are an absolute blast on a fly. You can't go wrong with them. You get everything from them. It's just something I fell into, more or less, but I have no complaints. It's been a great life.
Now, peacock bass are not native to Florida, right? That's correct?
Correct. Yep.
And how did they get in Florida waters? What's the story behind that?
Well, they're native to a number of countries in South America. Not all of them, but a good amount of them, especially in the Amazon region, where there's a number of different species, and that's subject to change there. We don't really know how many there are. There's not been any real conclusive studies. There's people that go down and take pictures of them, but it's not the same. They need to be checked out underneath a microscope to really see the differences, but there's some obvious differences, and then there's some that are not. And these fish change their colors as they go. They're not, even our fish here, we have one species here, and they can look different in one canal system to another canal system. I'm not going to say they're like a camouflage or like that, but they adapt to their surroundings and also their moods. Will create their colors to be stronger sometimes too. So that's another interesting thing about them as well.
I noticed that in a lot of the pictures, people holding Florida's peacock bass, that the colors are much different. I mean, they almost look like a different fish at times.
At times they do, and there was some speculation that we had a couple different species, and but we finally put that to rest by putting them under a microscope. We had a gentleman down here went around from Palm Beach County, which is north of Fort Lauderdale, down to south of Miami, and we got 200 different samples, and they all turned out to be the same. Wow. As the exact strain they are, we refer to them as a butterfly peacock, but in reality, I believe they're in the butterfly family, but in South America, they call them popoca, the type we have here. And they don't hang with the butterflies that much. So it's not like we don't see them crossbreeding down there or any of that. I suspect they're a relative, a close relative, but they kind of stay by themselves. And ours are different. The butterflies in Brazil and Venezuela are different than what we have here. So, but it doesn't matter. They're all great fish, every one of them.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of interrupted you, but I think you're going to tell us how they got to Florida.
Well, that's a pretty interesting story there, and I could probably do a whole show on just how they got here. So to keep it short, the state did bring them in. There was a gentleman named Paul Shafflin who they brought in 1979 to do a study on the waters, and they couldn't figure out why we had all these strange fish in these canals that didn't really belong here. And his conclusion, he actually did a proposal. It went through our state senate, and all that bit had to be passed by all the legal people to bring these fish in. They brought them in 1982. They spawned them off through about 1984, and then they introduced 20,000 fingerlings spread across, a dozen or so canals from South Dade County, south of Miami, up to the north end of Broward County. And they've spread out since then, and they've done well. So they do come and go. As when I say come and go, one winter will be colder than another winter, and they are temperature sensitive. If the water temperatures drop below 60, they pretty much die at that point. At 65, their slime starts to not produce as much, and then they get diseased, and before you know it, that's how they actually die. They don't die abruptly from the cold so much. It's more of a slower process, unfortunately.
Wow. Huh. So they're pretty sensitive. Now, when did the population become large enough that they became sought after as a sports fish?
Well, it wasn't talked about a whole lot. It was, I was bass fishing back then a lot, largemouth bass fishing, and I read a little article about the stocking program, and I was interested like anybody else. It was, it's a fish that you could see they were a beautiful fish, so I got my boat. At that point, I was living up here in Hollywood area north of Miami and went down to some of the canals I used to fish as a kid and caught my first peacocks and more or less fell in love with them. And, of course, at that point, we didn't know how to fish for them. Other than fishing for bass. So there was some trial and error, and it took a long time to really get things down pat. And I actually started guiding for peacock bass in 89, to give you an idea, 1989. So that and the fly fishing kind of came along, and I got tired of having people come fly fishing with me and not be able to show them enough about that. I knew where the fish were. I could put them on them, but I didn't know enough about fly fishing. So I picked up the fly rod, and that's how I got into fly fishing. So it's
by necessity.
You never know. Well, necessity, but I also enjoyed it. You know, it was just another way of fishing, and I love all kinds of fishing. So don't get me wrong, but peacock bass are definitely my favorite fish, and that's just because they supported a family of four kids and a wife at home. So it's been a pretty good life for me. I can't complain.
And in a nice, warm part of the country.
I do not like cold weather. I'm right there with the peacocks. To me, the freezing mark is not 32. The freezing mark is 60. So, anything below 60 is freezing for me. So,
and is that when the slime starts rolling off your back then, huh, Alan?
More or less, yes. I've never been a fan of cold weather and never plan to be. So I will stay somewhere south, always.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend in Oaxaca, Mexico last night, and he says, oh, it's cold here, it's cold here. I said, what's the temperature? And he said, 68.
I go, okay. I'm with them. It's time to pull them up. The things they wear up north, the underjohns or whatever.
Oh, yeah, long underwear,
Long underwear. It's time to pull them out when it gets in the 60s.
The people in Minnesota and Canada, they'd be laughing at us right now. Yeah. Anyway, the population, is it growing or has it stabilized or is it still spreading?
Every year is different, and we had a very cold winter in 2010, and they got knocked back severely. And that was probably the worst cold winter we had that I can remember. I mean, we had a cold one in 2001 as well that hurt them as well. But now 2010 was a really bad year. And in saying that, they bounce back very fast. They are very productive, or they reproduce often.
Prolific.
It's part of the reason why ours don't get as big as the ones in South America, at least in my opinion, is because they spend too much time in the reproductive cycles. The bigger fish spawn once a year, whereas this species here will spawn two, even three times a year, depending on what's going on with the weather. If it's warmer longer, then some will start jumping back up on the beds again. And it's just, they seem to know when the time is right. But in saying that, they only average living 5 to 7 years. So they just burn out. I think they burn out much faster than the bigger species of peacock bass do.
Can you explain the habitat preferences of peacock bass and where in Florida they can typically be found?
Well, any place south of Lake Okeechobee, most of the canals will at least have some in them. Obviously, some will have more than others. And as you get into closer to the ocean, where the canal waters tend to stay warmer, and you get into Broward County and Dade County, we have what's called a Biscayne Aquifer, which is our natural water supply, and it kind of oozes through the ground. And it goes to the south, and it goes in about 20 miles in from the ocean and heads south down to Flamingo, Florida Bay, in that area, by the southern tip of Florida. And that keeps the canals warmer than they would be if they weren't. And saying this, keep in mind the canals are all man-made. There's not an inch of canal that is not man-made. It's all our way of, we've kind of changed the cycle of Florida, especially South Florida. It's why we can live here. Otherwise, you'd have a small strip on right by the ocean that you could live on. Everything else would be swamp. But by putting the canals in, it drained the areas and enabled them to build. It's part of the process. It's I like to call it man-made evolution. You know, it's what we did here. And the reason why the peacocks can live here and all the other species, we've got close to 40 species of non-native fish that are reproducing in these canals to go along with the peacocks. So it's all kinds of fish from South America, Central America, Asia, you name it, we've got it.
Now, I mean, we always hear these stories that around snakes of people letting pets out from their, aquariums or their snake cages. Is that where a lot of these species come from? Or is that
probably 99% of them were released by people that lived here. Yeah, it was not, they're not supposed to be here. It's not recommended. In fact, it's illegal to release snakes, fish that are not native to the area. And you're not supposed to be transporting them or any of that stuff. And you can actually get in some trouble if you get caught doing it. But most people were doing it because they didn't want to kill their pets. You know, they had them in their tanks and they just tossed them into the canals.
Some of those probably got too big for the tanks,
Exactly. And some people just, they don't want to kill them. That's all. Which I understand, but it's not a good thing. And though in my case, it was actually a good thing. I made a living because of what they did.
Off of it. Yeah. I know even up north, I think almost every state has laws against transporting fish
Oh,
from
yeah.
lake to lake or water, you know,
Definitely.
any kind of waterway to another river. Yeah, because, well, you got whirling disease, you got these all kinds of things that can be moved, and then crossbreeding and stuff. Yeah.
It's not really a good thing, but, you know, down here we're kind of used to it because
Yeah.
not much in South Florida is native when you get down to it. It's all been man-made. And because of that, we're used to having all the strange fish, snakeheads, all that stuff that is in here. We've got what's called the tiger bass. We've got all kinds of things in here. All kinds of things.
Yeah. Now, do you inadvertently catch some of those when you're fishing for peacocks, or?
When you're fishing for the peacocks, especially if you slow it down. We've got Oscars. We've got Mayan cichlids. They will grab a fly in a heartbeat. You won't be able to keep them off a fly. And I've got some people actually, well, sometimes they want to go out and fish out in the Everglades for a whole day and do nothing but fish for Oscars. And they'll bring a 4-weight fly rod. And I've seen some guys bring a 2-weight, you know, just because they want to have fun with these type of fish. And saying that, the Oscars grew up to about 2.5 pounds. The Mayan cichlids, about the same. The tiger bass, they're also called a jaguar guapote. They actually grow up to about 3.5, 4 pounds. Though most of the fish you're going to catch are pretty small, especially on the fly. If you throw a small fly, you can keep busy all day long, all day long.
Yeah. I remember the Oscar I had in my aquarium ate everything in the aquarium.
Yes, they are known for that. They are known for
yeah,
doing that.
cleaned it right out, you know. Yeah, it was amazing how quickly he did that. But
But the flies are deadly for him. You can catch a lot of
yeah,
fish
I
on
bet.
flies down here.
Joe Gallagher, he's in Pennsylvania, asked, what about waterways located in Big Cypress Preserve? Do they hold peacocks? I don't know where that is, so I don't know
Well,
if
the
that's...
Big Cypress Preserve is out to the west. There are some peacocks over on the west coast, down around Naples, in that area, maybe a little bit up into Fort Myers. They can get up that way, and sometimes they'll get up a little bit further, but then the cooler weather will move in, and it will kill off a lot of them. They can't, it's not like they can just, you know, move to where it's warm. You know, the canals are pretty much blocked off at one place or another. So, I mean, they can
Right.
get through them eventually, but that, you know, not if they're trying to get away from the colder water. They just, it's just unfortunate part of what happens, but it also keeps them in check. And it's why they never seem to really get any further north. I've heard of them being caught further up the state some, but I know it's not for long, and it's by accident most of the time, and maybe some people brought some up there, transported them up there and dumped them into a lake or something like that because they wanted them there, but it's kind of putting them to a certain death. They will, and they might even reproduce once or twice, but
Right.
eventually those areas get too cold. And as far as the Big Cypress goes, that area probably gets, in my opinion, would probably get a little too cold just because there's
Okay.
no, you don't have concrete there. You know, there's no asphalt, concrete out there. It's just open, and whatever lakes and canals that run through those areas are going to probably get too cold for them. So I would
Okay.
suspect not. You know, but it doesn't mean
And
they can't get there.
yeah. And the Everglades, are they?
Definitely, they're definitely in the Everglades. And I would say, oh, I catch them up in an area we call the Holy Lands, which is on the Palm Beach, Broward County line out west in the Everglades there. They're definitely out there. And there's some nice ones out there. I was out in the Everglades today, and we caught some nice peacocks along with some largemouths. And, you know, it's, and by the way, this time of the year to me is probably my favorite time of the year to target the peacocks because you can catch them more
Okay.
on topwater. Poppers will work for them. But to keep in mind, when you're working the poppers, you got to be aggressive and you got to pop them pretty regularly and make a good pop with them. It's not a subtle pop usually. It's something you want to really pop it hard. If you pop it too subtle, you're going to end up catching Oscars and Mayan cichlids will come up and grab it there. But for the peacocks, you want to be aggressive. And when they come up and boil underneath it, you want to keep it popping. You do not want to stop what you're doing. If you stop what you're doing, they will turn and go away. It's the strangest thing. Not to say that sometimes they might hang around, but most of the time they turn and go away. So you
Okay,
just be aggressive.
so I may not have caught this correctly, but you said this time of year is great for poppers. Is it also just in general best time of year? I had a couple of questions from Jason and Dino about the best time to come down to fish for peacocks.
Well, it's my favorite time to fish for them. That doesn't always mean it's the best time, okay? That's just because
Okay.
of the style of bite that you get this time of year. Yes, you can catch them subsurface as well. And when it cools down fairly good, then you definitely want to go down for them. Yes, you can catch them that way. It's not my preferred way.
Okay.
Now, I love topwater. I think most people love it anytime you get a topwater bite going. But in saying that, if they want to catch the biggest ones, the best ones, it's usually going to be middle March through April. And I say that because then it's sight fishing time, and that's when they go into their spawning, their first initial spawn, which is the biggest spawn of the year. That's when you get more of them doing it on a regular basis, and that's also when the bigger ones are usually the first ones to pop up and get up on the beds. And not that, you know, some people don't like it when you do this style of fishing. Some people love it. I find most fly fishing people do love it, okay? I love it, too. In fact, it's a blast. It's pretty simple. You just got to get the fly behind them, beyond where their bed's at. You want to give it a couple of quick strips through the bed to rile them up, and you'll see them attack it. And it's just a question of when they do this, you got to be very ready to set the hook. And when I say set the hook here, you don't want to lift the rod. You want to strip strike them, then lift the rod. And that's the key. You got to hammer them. Or otherwise, they're going to come up, and they're going to say, how do to you as they're leaving, and adios, amigos, and as they throw that fly back at you if you don't get a good hook set. They're very, very good at shaking their heads, and they'll jump out of the water, and they'll spit it right back at you.
Okay.
But they're
okay.
Fun. Yeah. Those are probably the two favorite time of the years to catch them that way. But saying that, you can catch them throughout the year. Unless it's really brutally cold out, which does happen sometimes on those days, you're probably best not to go after them. But, you know, try something else. But, well, on those type of days, we don't get them too often. But when you do get them, it's probably very cold out, and it's very windy usually. And unless you want to get beaten on the head with a fly, because they do hurt when they hit, especially on us, especially on the back of the head. That's not the normal. That's an exception. That kind of happens. So you can catch them year-round. Summertime's more of a mixed bag, just to give you an idea there. There'll be some on the beds. They have a secondary spawn that's fairly strong, not like the one in March and April. And in saying that, summer in May can be pretty good too, further north. The northern canals tend to be better in May is what I find. Okay. I just kind of move my way up from Miami up and fish up into the Palm Beach area, which is second county up from Dade County, I should say.
Okay. Alan, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Alan more about Florida's exotic peacock bass. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, it's the uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Alan Zaremba about Florida's exotic peacock bass. If you'd like to ask Alan a question, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, Alan, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us a bit about your businesses, it sounds like, and what you're doing in South Florida.
Well, I've been doing it for, 36, 37 years now, I guess, so I've been at it a long time. And, of course, started off with just the guiding. But then I branched over into going down to South America, and I visit Colombia, Brazil, Argentina, Bolivia. I seem to go everywhere just about. Uruguay, I can't forget that, because there we go for golden dorados, which is another great fish to catch on a fly, too, by the way. And you talk about setting the hook, you've got to really set the hook on those guys. They got lots of teeth in their jaws, so it's something you have to work with there. But that's probably my second favorite fish behind peacock bass.
Yeah, and where can people find out about your business? What's your website?
Well, my website is worldwidesportsfishing.com. And they can get a survey of what I do and all the different trips that I run in different areas. I also go to the Bahamas, and I go to Alaska, and also do some trips in Panama and Costa Rica. And those are some really nice areas to fish, too. Not all of them are fly fishing, but some are, you know, a good amount of them are. And the peacock bass in South America can be caught on a fly as well. It's just you got to use a little bit heavier tackle. And you've got to be a little bit better prepared. And that's something I guess I want to talk about, too, is with the leaders we use, even in Florida. That's something we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's so much to go over with this.
Yeah. So again, it's worldwidesportsfishing.com. So
yeah,
folks,
that's
if you
sports
want to go.
With an S,
right.
With an S at it at the end of the sports. But
right.
You can see the prices for the general prices of the trips that they run, and they go anywhere from $2,500 to how much you want to spend. I mean, there's you can spend a while on fishing, as we all do.
What about if people want to hire you as a guide in South Florida? Same
the
place
way
to get
to
hold of you?
Yeah, the best way to do that, you can do it off the website there too, but you can also call me at 954-609-3671, and that's the best way to get a hold of me here. You can text me as well. If I'm on the water, I admit I don't answer the phone real good, so you're best to leave me a message, but I suggest everybody to text. I see that a lot better than sometimes the voicemails don't go through. So,
can you give us your phone number again slowly?
Okay, 954-609-3671.
There you go, folks. So if you're looking for Alan to guide you in South Florida, that's how you get a hold of him. And
happy to take him out.
Yeah, we're getting some questions here on the internet too. Roy Fukushima, he's out in Orange, California. Where in Florida do you guide?
Most of my guiding goes from North Miami up to Boynton Beach, which is in Palm Beach County, and out into the Everglades along Alligator Alley, Tamiami Trail, and those areas. And that's where some of the best peacock fishing is. And I've got some very isolated canals, one in North Miami. I have a key to a gate. Nobody else gets in there. And I have some other canals. I drop a couple. I have two different boats. One's a Ginu, 16-foot Ginu, and the other one's a 20-foot Sea Chaser flats boat, which is great for fly fishing out of, because it's got a big front deck on it, and I like to use that. I can put two people up there and literally, if they can work together, because that takes a little bit there too.
Yeah. Phil in Kentucky asks, what parts of Florida should someone go to in order to find large peacock bass?
Well, in all honesty, large peacock bass, to catch one over 8 pounds here is pretty rare. They do happen, but most of them are going to be under 8 pounds. So it depends on what you consider large. It's like I get people that ask me, what's a trophy fish? Well, trophy fish is what you consider a trophy. You know, some people, I've seen some people, you know, do the measurements for a 3-pound fish, and I've seen some that want to catch at least a 5-pounder, and I get some that want to catch a 10-pounder, and I tell them it's fine, but it's going to cost you probably about $5,000 more to catch that one. You have to travel a little further away, too. So I am a little sarcastic sometimes. I like to have fun with that, but I say it in a joking way, and it is what it is. I mean, our species just can't grow that big. Have they caught them over 10 pounds? There's been a few caught, but it's so rare to really see one that big that it just doesn't happen. I don't want to mislead anybody that way.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them look pretty darn big in photographs, but it also
they're
depends
all great
on how long the arms are of the person that's holding it.
Well, there's certain ways you can take pictures with a camera that do make it look bigger, for sure. I don't like the extended arm too much because it starts to look too obvious, you know, sometimes.
Yeah,
that's okay. I understand. People are excited, and that's what it's about. It's about us getting excited.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of talked about this, but Treg asked specifically. He's from Idaho. He says, do they escape the canals and get into other waterways?
Well, all the canals are pretty much hooked up. Okay, so as far as other waterways goes, the only thing that we have here that's other waterways would be lakes and stuff like that. But even most of the lakes are underground hooked up to it. Our canal system is also our flood control. And it's also why you don't ever hear South Florida on the East Coast ever really having any major, major flooding. Yes, we do get some flooding sometimes, but it doesn't do like your rivers do in Colorado and North Carolina, like what happened here just a couple of weeks ago. That doesn't happen here. We don't get raging rivers that are coming over the banks or anything. It oozes over the banks when that happens. But we get a big rainstorm, they open the gates and let the water out. Peacocks also could take a little bit of salt, too. So, I mean, I've heard of them being in brackish waters, being caught, and that I don't generally fish any brackish waters, but you know, I've got many regular canals. As far as I'm not sure, you know, what he means by that, but there's really no other places for the fish to go other than our canals and lakes.
Yeah. Yeah, now you do have that like intercoastal, so they're not in that because that's brackish or salt.
Yeah, right? That's even more salt there. I don't think they can really survive that well in there. They wouldn't do that well. Not to say that they couldn't, they might survive for a while, but it just, you know, there's a lot of factors involved that could possibly change that. But the intercoastal, I don't think so. I've never heard of them being caught there.
Yeah. But so, like, you can be in a canal in Fort Lauderdale as a fish and make it down to Hollywood through the canals?
Somewhat.
Or down to Miami? Yeah.
There's floodgates. And the only time they can really move from one to the other that way would be when they open the gates to let water out. Most of the time that water is open to let it out to the ocean. Or it does go into the intercoastal that way. And those fish are strong enough, they don't really get carried away with it. These waters are not moving that fast for the most part. I mean, they might move 5 miles an hour, and all these fish can deal with that very easily.
Okay. So when the gates open, they might, if they swim upstream, they might get on the other side of the gate, and that may take them to a whole new area.
Well, that's also some of the pluses, because we have saltwater fish that when the gates open, let water out. Certain saltwater fish like snook and tarpon and jack crevalle, even ladyfish and another fish we call a bigmouth sleeper, they will come up into those canals looking for food. And that's how they get landlocked, and they end up in, that's how we catch what we call freshwater tarpon. They're not really freshwater tarpon. They just get locked in because they'd have to be by the gate when it opened up to get back out. And they will catch tarpon sometimes 30 pounds, you know, on light tackle. Or, you know, on a light tackle or a fly rod, that's a blast.
Oh, they're fun at that size, yeah.
Yeah, and snook, too.
They're a blast.
So, and we catch some big snook sometimes in the canals, over 20 pounds. So it's a pretty good size. You just don't know what's going to bite in these canals. It's very unique.
What about lakes? Are they in the lakes or just in the canals?
No, they're in the lakes, too. Most any lake down here has them. Again, the lakes are kind of, most of them are hooked up to some of the canals as well. And that's how they can move around, and they do. So that's just, and of course, now the lakes are a little bit more subject to weather as far as cold temperatures. If we have some severe cold for a while, that could stop it and stop the fish in those lakes sometimes. I've seen a lot of kill-offs in the lakes at times.
What, when my daughter was going to the University of Miami down there, and I was eyeing all these lakes on golf courses and on the university campus there and stuff. And I kept wondering, are there any peacocks in there? What's in those lakes?
There probably is. I mean, originally the peacocks, they tried stocking the peacocks also back in the mid-60s. It failed miserably. And that's where they did stock them, was in golf course lakes. And the problem with golf course lakes is, number one, they're not that deep usually. And number two, the Biscayne Aquifer does not flow into them. And because of that, those waters would cool down. We also had a very cold winter. I want to say it was 65 or 66, or maybe a balance of both years. And they did not survive that. And so that's why in the late 70s, when they realized we had all these other fish popping up in these canals, that's how that all came about. And his conclusion was, if they were put in the canals where the aquifer fed into, it keeps those waterways about 5 degrees warmer than they would be if it was in a lake. And that's what enabled the peacocks to get established. And because they're also very prolific, they reproduce a lot, they're going to expand from that alone. And that's what happened. But they get knocked back still every few years. We'll have a kill off one place or another because the water temperature's just got too cold for them.
Now, going back to when they were first stocked, the first stocking, the second stocking, they were put in to control the other fish that were non-natives.
That
okay.
was the thought, yeah, because they eat fish.
Did it work?
They eat, 95% eat fish to some extent. But, you know, the Hurricane Andrew, I'll tell you what it probably put the biggest control on was the spotted tilapia, some of the African tilapia that we had in these canals. That probably did the biggest damage on them, which is really what they were intended to do. The Mayan cichlids came along later. Hurricane Andrew is what really caused the Mayan cichlids to get loose. There were some farms, I don't know what kind of farms you call them, but they were growing them for the aquarium trade business, and the farm got wiped out by the hurricane when Andrew went through, and they got loose. They got into the canals, and the Mayan cichlids now are up to Lake Okeechobee. In fact, they could take a little bit colder water than the peacocks can. So they're good for about 55 degrees. Oscar is about the same. Some of the other fish are in the low 50s. Snakeheads are good for about 50. The snakehead variety that we have here, there's different types. That's north. Those are northern snakeheads, and ours are called bullseye snakeheads, which are from southern Asia.
Okay. Now, is Florida the only state in the U.S. where you'll find peacocks?
In the mainland U.S., yes. Now, they are also in Puerto Rico, and they're also in Hawaii.
Oh, really? In Hawaii? Wow.
Yeah, there's some lakes there. They've been in Hawaii longer than they have in Florida.
They must have got stocked there as well.
Yes, they did.
All originated in South America, basically,
Central America. South America for the peacocks. They were not in Central. Okay. They are in Panama, but they were not native to Panama either. They were definitely a South American fish. Brazil, Colombia, Venezuela, Suriname, Guyana. There's a number, the Amazon basin and a little bit further south from the Amazon. In southern Brazil, south of the Amazon, they have a peacock that's called a blue peacock, which is another gorgeous fish. All their fins got a bluish tint to them. Top, bottom, everything. And then they have 5 bars on them, whereas have like 3 partial bars on ours, half bars.
Yeah. I think it's this month's National Geographic. The whole issue is devoted to the Amazon basin.
I'm going to have to get that. I find that interesting.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things. I mean, it's such a whole different world down there. just how these fish live and so forth, and the people where, in some months of the year, the fish are swimming through what used to be branches on the trees where the birds were perched.
Dry. Some of those rivers will go up 40 feet.
Yeah,
and
incredible.
They flood over. The amount of water that's down there is absolutely incredible. And I know they say the Amazon is disappearing and all that bit, but I could tell you I've been in a float plane flying over the jungle for 5 hours and not see anything but broccoli heads and snaking rivers, the broccoli heads being trees. So it's a pretty big place.
Yeah, incredible. Yep. Well, listen, I need to take another quick break here. But when we come back, more about the peacock bass. Discover the power of pure skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead, trout, or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Alan Zaremba about Florida's exotic peacock bass. If you'd like to ask Alan a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to send us your question. Okay, let's see where we're at here, Alan. Is that Dino in Florida wrote in and asked, are there seasonal differences in where they are and what they eat?
Not really. The only difference is when they spawn, they still eat, but they only eat close by, and they eat fish. Though that time, if there's that much fish around them, they probably would eat a lizard or something like that. It does happen once in a while, but majority of the time, they eat 95% are going to eat fish. So that's why you want a bait pattern. That's why I tend to lean on clouds or minnows for them when I'm going down below. As far as poppers go, I think that they're, in that case, they're hitting the noise. I'm convinced it's more just aggression on their side. It gets their attention, but they will eat it. I don't think they know what it is, but they're charging. I know everybody takes a lot of pride in tying their poppers and flies and stuff like that, but simple is actually pretty good. You don't have to be real fancy with the flies.
Yeah. Chuck in Placerville, California asks, do peacock bass spawn during the same time frame as largemouth Florida bass? And are there any specific Florida regulations regarding peacock bass?
Yeah, to get to the regulations, as far as keeping peacock bass, you're allowed to keep two per day per angler and one over 17 inches. That's the general rule. They don't want you, they'd rather you throw the bigger fish back because they're better at protecting their young and all that. But though at this stage, they're so well established, I don't know that really matters anymore. And they just have left it that way for all these years. That's the way it was when they first told everybody about them, that, you know, first couple of years, they didn't let anybody keep them. I think it was 1989 when they started letting people keep two, as far as that goes. I don't remember the rest of the question you asked me there, but I got going on that.
Well, sticking with the regulations, side benefit is, are they any good to eat? If you're gonna
actually, they're pretty good to eat, though there's two ways of looking at that. Because I grew up in this area and I've seen how the water gets treated by people, I've seen, you know, we have sewage lines that run across the canals. I've seen those sewage lines leaking. I won't eat anything out of the canals unless it's maybe out in the Everglades. Out there, I'll keep some. There's just, you know, you see all the nice green yards. They put a lot of fertilizer on
nitrogen.
Yes. So I'm not. I found that the fish in the city canals tend to have a muddy flavor to them. If I catch them out in the Everglades, I keep a couple every once in a while. I do love fish, but believe it or not, I love saltwater fish to eat. So I'm not big on the freshwater fish. But they are edible, and they're not bad for you, in all honesty, within reason. You know, I think if you ate them all the time, maybe something might happen. I don't know. But, again, we have a lot of green yards, very green, and it's nice that we have them. But there's a reason for that, because we don't have great soil down here. Or, you know, you dig down a couple feet, and you're on rock. That's what you got. So, you know, things don't grow that great as far as that goes. So they fertilize the heck out of it.
I'm like you. I like saltwater fish to eat. Yeah. And
snapper, grouper.
I'm in trout country, and everybody's going, "Oh, don't you keep in your fish?" And no, I don't really like them that much.
Does anybody keep trout anymore? I never hear of anybody actually keeping trout to eat anymore.
Some people do.
Do they? I fish for them once in a while. I go up north, and I've done my share of fishing up there and fly fishing up there for trout too. In Alaska, I love it. It's another great fishery.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of areas that are put and take. You know, they stock them. And, of course, the stockers don't taste nearly as good as the wild ones. But people do that. You know, they take their kids out. And, you know, that's fine. You know, that's why they stock them. So, the other part of that question was, do peacock bass spawn during the same time frame as largemouth?
Well, that's a good question, and I'll explain this. Our largemouth don't spawn in South Florida. Let me put it this way. In South Florida, our waterways rarely ever go below 60 degrees. So there's nothing that triggers them. You know, up north, the fish will spawn because the water warms up to a certain temperature. Well, it never gets that cold here. So our largemouth kind of start spawning when the waters actually start cooling down some, is what I found. And that can happen in October, November. But our largemouth will spawn through May. You'll find some spawning from October through May. Now, they don't all spawn at the same time. Now, maybe up in Lake Okeechobee, there's a better pattern for it there, but I don't fish up that way anymore. And, so I don't see that here. I find largemouth spawning anytime, almost anyway. Now, peacocks, I found them spawning every month of the year if the weather allows for it. It just depends. If we have a stretch of 4 or 5 days and the temperatures are in the 80s, and even in January, and we have some 80-degree days, it will trigger a spawn in some of the canals. You'll start to see the peacocks start to spawn. But they do have the main spawn is usually middle March through April, and more northern canals might be in May. So you just have to adjust a little bit. But I can almost go find some spawning any time of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered the question well.
No, that makes perfect sense to me. I did an interview with Debbie Hansen up in, she's up there around the Tampa, St. Pete area, and she specializes in largemouth bass up there. So that makes sense what you said. You know, further north, they can grow bigger, you know, spawn up there because the temperatures are right up there. So
it's funny you say that, too, because the old theory was peacock bass, the hotter, the better. I found that's not true. Okay, the hotter months doesn't make it any better. Their temperature range is just smaller. What happens when the waters get too warm, the oxygen levels start to come down. when the oxygen levels come down, all fish start to slow down some. So that's why, you know, I just, you know, that was a theory that was put out there. I think writers in the early years were looking for stuff to write about, something new, you know, to sell articles. And I'm not knocking them for it. I understand. And it sounded good, but the truth is that's not the truth. I actually like this time of year as the waters cool down, the peacocks start schooling up more. You get more activity. Now when the peacocks are schooling up, the largemouths start schooling up. We start getting, you know, we get more active waterways, which makes for better fishing. Even though this year our water levels out in the Everglades right now are so high, it's pushed some of the fish out into the back areas and in the marsh areas, which has made the fishing a little bit tougher that way. But like today, we went out and we caught some nice peacocks in the canals and some nice largemouths too. So, I mean, we caught largemouth up to 4 pounds. So it wasn't giants, but they weren't bad, you know, especially on top water.
Yeah. And it's, I haven't looked at the latitude of where these peacocks live in South America, but evidently down there, there is that sweet spot of that temperature range is more prevalent down there than in Florida. I guess Florida is probably a little further north of the equator than those areas down in South America.
Yeah, well, they're on the equator there, and there it's more about water levels. That controls more of the, you know, if you go in the rivers themselves down there, the water's actually quite cool. It's in the low, mid-70s, which is, it's cool for there. Let me put it that way. It's cool for here, our canals, too, to some extent. But because of that, you know, they don't spawn in the rivers. They go back into the lagoons to spawn because the lagoon waters are going to be warmer than the river waters are. And there's just lagoons everywhere down there. It's an amazing fishery down there. It's just an amazing system. I mean, it's hard to believe how big it is, how vast it is. I'd say the Amazon is probably the equivalent of at least half the United States.
It's about, they showed that in National Geographic, an overlay of the United States. They're about the same size. Yeah.
Is that okay? So I'm even being shy on it there, you know, because it's true. Brazil has the biggest part of the Amazon, but the other countries all have parts of it as well, you know, so it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. It's incredible. Okay, let's switch now for a moment to equipment. What weight rod and what type of line do you use for the peacocks?
Well, I'm very basic, okay, and for a number of reasons. Down here, we make a lot of short casts. And with short casts, you don't want your traditional leader setups where, you know, you have, you're downsizing it and going to the smaller. Here, I use a straight piece of 20. And I don't use fluorocarbon. I use monofilament, straight 20, 5-foot section. That's all I want. And the reason is a lot of times, especially when it's sight fishing time, you're throwing clouds or minnows for them to get down into the areas at that point. Clouds or minnows don't cast very traditional. So it's not like you're fishing for a trout with an egg or something like that where you're just kind of rolling it over to get into the areas and letting it float to the fish. Here you want to get directly on them with it, so you want something that you can be more direct with. It's very untraditional. When I get the traditional trout fishermen, they struggle sometimes to get used to what's going on. But once you get them used to it, then they figure it out and it's all good. But it's a different ball game. And because you tend to make a lot of short casts, you don't want a lot of leader hanging out, no matter how you go about it, because it's just, you're going to get hung up in trees and somebody's yard. You might catch a Rolls Royce driving by or something like that. There's all kinds of things. And I have seen some crazy things that way. And you will lose that battle with a car. That much I know.
Yeah,
I've seen that happen a few times before.
I've done that with a bird down in Belize once, but not
birds
a car.
Can do the same. Yeah. No, it's a crazy fishery down here. I mean, you're fishing behind a lot of people's houses. There's stuff that you're happy to see, and there's other stuff you wish you had never seen. And then, you know, there's another question I get asked a lot, is it a good place to go fish off the banks? And there are places you can fish off the banks here, but you got to be careful with where you go, because unfortunately some of these canals go through some rougher neighborhoods, and if you're parked there, you could end up getting a lot of friends, and you don't want
good
those
to know.
Kind of friends. Yeah, you have to be a little careful of that. You can also, if somebody's looking for a map, they can actually get a hold of myfwc.com, which is our authority down here that regulates the canals, Florida Wildlife Commission, and they can get you the maps. You can get them off online. So you can actually get a map of a lot of the canals where these fish were put in initially, and that's a helpful thing there. But even in those, they'll tell you to be careful where you're driving. and where you park.
Also, I suppose you may have issues with private property. You have to watch out for that, right?
You definitely do. You definitely have to watch out for that. And some places you cannot go into, and you'll see signs all over the place, and you almost feel like it's anti-fishing around there. And sometimes I feel that way too. They've actually, unfortunately, shut down a number of canals over the years just because of some of the problems they've had with people dumping stolen cars and stolen boats and, you know, and just leaving their trash all over the place. They've shut the areas down, unfortunately. But there's still a lot of fish to fish.
The place for the maps is myfwl.com?
Myfwc.com.
C.com. Okay.
Yeah, FWC.com.
Myfwc.com.
Yes, yes. It's pretty simple. Okay. And that's also, they can get their, you do need a freshwater fishing license down here. The boat can't buy, you can't buy one for a boat in freshwater. So they do have to want to fish. That's something to remember too. You do need a license, and they do check. They do patrol not so much the waterways. They patrol more from the land. That's where they get, where they get most of their tickets written. So that's something you want to be careful about too. They're very easy to get now. They've made it very easy. So you can get one online. You can call in and get one that immediately. You'll have it good. They'll give you a set of numbers and you're good to go.
Now, Craig in Idaho asked, is there any current in the canals?
Sometimes a lot. And right now there's a lot because we've had a lot of rain this year. Though it seems like we've had a lot of rain many years in a row now. So we've had no shortage of water. Yes, we have problems with water here, but that's because there's too many people. You start putting too many people in the area, that makes it harder. But yes, there's always water moving, especially this time of year when we've had a lot of rain. The Everglades canals, there's a lot of water moving there, and I still catch them in the canals, but I tend to look for areas where the water will back up. If there's like an eddy area or a cut that goes into the marsh areas, or then the other areas would be go around bridges, pilings, structure, lots of structure. Mm-hmm. They will relate to structure, whether it's a car in a canal or a body in the canal or something like that. And I'm being a little smart aleck there. But
you're going to scare people off now.
No. I have found a couple bodies over the years. It's going to happen. We have many. We have like 1,500 miles of canals that go through South Florida. So things happen, and it's not always bad. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes somebody actually died on the canal. It happens.
Yeah. Well, we kind of got sidetracked here, but let me ask you one more question on canals, then we'll come back to equipment. Craig also asked, are the canals navigable in public? You already said they've closed some canals off, I guess, gate them or something. Can you go wherever you want on the canals?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's many ramps, especially out in the Everglades, that you can access the waters out there. That's much easier out there. City canals, there's ramps. Some of them are not very good. I've got some that are dirt ramps. I've got one place I put in. I actually jumped the boat over a sidewalk and put it in a canal there. And I get people that look at me and they think I'm nuts. But it puts me in an area where not many people fish, and I always find it. Places that don't get fished as often have what I call more stupid fish, and I'd rather fish for stupid fish than educated fish. So I haven't seen a whole lot of lures or flies or poppers and that bit, and fish are just a little bit happier to go after things better than.
Sure. Okay. What weight rod and what type of line do you use? That was my question first. We didn't get an answer to that.
Okay, well, I told you what leader I like to use. First of all, I don't like losing fish, one, for my clients. Two, I do that because, like I say to some of these people, I realize, you know, you want maybe to drag, you know, the line to go out and all that bit, but using lighter line, but you could do the same thing with a heavier line. You just lose less flies this way. And poppers, you can get to them a little bit easier. You can pull them through the pads a little bit easier and all that stuff. So, as far as an actual weight rod, my favorite is a 6 or 7 weight. That kind of covers everything. You can go 5 weight. The peacocks, you start going down to 4 weight rods, the peacocks will dictate pretty good to you at that point, especially if you get one that's 3 pounds or so. So I don't recommend a 3 pound or, you know, real light line for that matter, or light rods, too light. If you're fishing for Oscars or buying cichlids or that stuff, a 2-weight's fun, you know, if you can throw it. I'm not good with a 2-weight, okay? I have my heavier ones I like a little bit better. Not real heavy, though.
So what type of line? Floating line? Tropical floating
Well,
line are you using?
that depends. Again, for the poppers, obviously you want a floating line, and you don't want a fluorocarbon leader at all on that because that tends to drag the poppers down, and you won't be able to get the good popping action out of it. The action is more what they're hitting. It's just, you know, if you can make a good sound with it, if you can make a good gurgle, gurglers will work also, work aggressively, you know, especially around pads and stuff on the gurglers.
What about mice?
I'm sure they would work.
Okay.
I don't generally throw them. The mice that we use for snakeheads usually
Okay.
because they tend to like that stuff. And there you're going to want a weed guard for those because you're throwing right up into the weeds for those fish. The peacocks are usually going to be more in the open or right on the edge of the weeds. So they'll come out and
Okay.
hit it. So you don't necessarily need a weed guard for that. So it would
Okay.
hurt, I guess, you know, it just, and I do like a little, I don't like the real small hooks. Some people like to use the really tiny hooks, and I generalize it just a one. One knot, something like that's going to be fine.
Okay. And then what about when you have to go deeper? Do you have to use any sinking tip, or are you still good with a floating line?
No, it does make a difference. I've seen it before. I had a story. I had a guy come down and fish with me once, and we changed him over to a sink line, not real heavy, but like an intermediate type sink line, and that helped him keep the fly more flat. Even though I hadn't thrown a clouser, you just don't want to pop up as much. You want it to stay more level, and that allowed him to catch more fish. He came back with a buddy of his, I don't know, a year later. He didn't tell his buddy about that, and so he's catching fish, and his buddy wasn't catching fish, and which I thought was a little cruel, but you know, I guess there was some competition involved there, and
Yeah.
I don't make those rules. My job is to find the fish and tell them where to throw. But and in that case, there sometimes you have to strip them really fast, and I've seen some guys do the two-hand strip, and that'll work pretty well for them as far as that goes. But then there's some days where they will hit it slower sometimes, so it's just a matter of getting in their face. And after, of course, when they're spawning, then it's a matter of being in their face, period. So
Yeah.
you're just getting around them.
Treg asked, do you use a bite tippet?
No.
No,
No.
just the 20
No.
pound, right?
If I'm using 20 pound, that's sufficient. And if a snakehead by chance comes up and grabs it, they do have teeth, but I found 20 pound to be sufficient most of the time. It's not usually a problem. I mean, you could put more on there, but the more you put on there, the more problematic it becomes with the trees. And again, we do make a lot of short casts. So the short casts, you just don't want that much out there.
Just had a question come in again about your website, wanting to know your website address. So can you share that again, Alan?
It's www.worldwidesports, and it's with an S, fishing.com.
Okay, there you go. Whoever anonymously asked that question.
Okay,
Okay.
that's fine.
what about, what kind of knot do you use to connect your flies?
Okay, now if I'm fishing them for them off the beds, I will tie an improved clinch to it, to a clouser minnow. I want everything to be direct in that case. If I'm trying to be more pleasing, I will tie a loop knot for them. Nothing, it's still not fancy, but I used to, you used to read them on the Rapala boxes years ago. I don't think they do any of that stuff now, but it showed you how to tie it. It's basically a square knot. You go through the line, goes through the cleat, comes back and goes through the square knot you created, and then I tie an improved clinch at the end of that to bring it together. Now, it's easy for me, but it's amazing how some people struggle with it. But I'm sure you could look it up online. And these days, we got YouTube and Google and everybody else. There's something
Oh
that's going to
yeah.
show you how to tie it. So
Yeah.
the internet's great and not so great, depending on how you go about it. But if you need something to find out something, there's a lot of information out there now,
Oh yeah, it's
especially in
amazing.
tying knots.
Yeah, definitely. Time for another quick break, and then we'll be back in just a moment with Alan and Florida's exotic peacock bass. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish and to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying and help to ensure future generations can continue and enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. Again, that's flyfishersinternational.org. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Alan Zaremba about Florida's exotic peacock bass. If you'd like to ask Alan a question, just go to our homepage and fill out the form and send it in, and we'll try to get it answered tonight on the show. Okay. All right. I think we handled the questions on equipment, food, and flies. We've kind of answered some of these things, but I want to make sure we've got it covered. One of the questions was, what do they feed on? You said primarily fish. And are they more active at certain times of days than others when they feed?
I like to call them the anytime fish. I've seen them schooling anytime. Up at daybreak. I've seen them in the middle of the day schooling up. I've seen them late evening just before it gets dark get active. Basically, to me, it's the anytime fish. At nighttime, they pretty much go dormant. They're like most tropical fish. If you see them in an aquarium and you turn the lights out, they kind of go into a corner and they kind of hang out. And the peacocks basically do the same thing unless they're on the beds. Then they stay by the beds. But even then, the beds are usually fairly close to the bank edges. Unfortunately, in South America, some of the locals that are out there, and they're indigenous people out there, and that's how they eat, they will get a floodlight and they will shine it in the water, and that's how they find their fish. And they spear them. Which is unfortunate, but, you know, they don't do enough damage, in all honesty. But if you're in an area where you've been catching fish, it's probably not good when you see them out there with the floodlights at night. And they're also spearing other tropical fish, too. But I hate to see it when I see them get the peacocks. But they're pretty much dormant at night. I discussing that with the biologist for the state, which I became good friends with over the years, and I got a lot of good information from them in the beginning. And they actually have called me up many times over the years asking me questions about things, too. So that's when you get kind of known for what you do, it's an interesting thing that way. But they basically said to me that maybe on a full moon, clear sky, they might do a little bit. I've also heard of them eating underneath bridges that were well lit up at night.
Okay.
You know, if there's a lot of lights and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm going to go by it. It's just a light thing there. And that's when they do most of their business.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite fly patterns and why? I know you've mentioned the clouser, which it's amazing how good that fly is everywhere in the world, isn't it? I mean,
sometimes I hate to even talk about it so much, but it's a winner. Bob Clouser came up with a great thing many years ago, and it's been copied thousands and thousands of times. I heard you talk about the Bugusi fly earlier, he makes a great fly too, and his flies, especially in the Amazon, work very well. They do work here too, and I've got some clients that tie with the synthetic material, and they're excellent. They last longer. They're really good flies. So I believe in those as well. Another one would be the half and halves, the Seavers. And then, of course, I think you might have mentioned game changers, or somebody asked about game changers.
Yeah, that's later on. Yeah, yes. Jason in Kentucky asked about game changers. Yeah.
They do work for them as well. But the basic thing is to stay aggressive with them. If it's moving and being active, they're going to tend to go after it. And the other thing is when they come up underneath it or you see them chasing it, don't stop. Don't stop. I mean, you might give it a quick pause, and sometimes they'll hit it that way, but most of the time they want it moving. So I just tell people to be very aggressive with their flies, and whether they're fly fishing or with lures or whatnot, just be aggressive. And if you want to take out all your anxieties, this is the perfect fish for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, though. You know, other fish, they'll take it on the paws, you know, as it drops. Yeah. Isn't it funny they're all different.
But sometimes peacocks will, too. I mean, I've seen peacocks come dancing around the fly before. You'll see them, you'll be pulling it back, you'll be stripping it back, and you'll see them come up behind it, then he swims around it from the other side and will come in from the front and hit it. So, I mean, they get pretty wacky on stuff sometimes.
You mentioned weed guards for the snakeheads, I think, because you were fishing into the weeds there. Are they necessary for peacocks?
Not so much. I don't really like them for the peacocks, but that's okay. To say that sometimes you're around weeds. I mean, fish like weeds. Part of the problem, going back to way back when they first brought the peacocks in, part of the problem was the largemouth populations weren't that great in the canals all the time. Some canals that had weeds did, but our water management people, their job is to keep the canals running free and clear, which I understand that sometimes they go overboard and they will strip the canals of weeds. And largemouth bass do not do well when you take the weed out of it. Peacocks, where they're native to, you don't find that many weeds down there. The weeds are not the big deal in the Amazon. Oh. Yeah, there's trees and stuff, but the weeds, because a river might raise 30 feet or 40 feet, when it's coming down, it's ripping everything out.
Yeah,
You know, nothing can survive. Peacocks are used to that kind of thing. That's their native habitat is not a whole lot of weeds. So they can survive well in that. So that's why they could feed on the spot of tilapia. That's really the main reason they brought them in. The Oscars in that bit were not as big of a problem back then as they are. Now, they will explode sometimes. You'll get in some years, we'll have a ton of Oscars out there. Another year will be the Mayan cichlids. Another year, it's the jaguar guapotes. The peacocks are steady out in all these places, especially out in the Everglades. So the city canals are good, too. It's hard to get to all of them.
You mentioned size of the flies. What about color? Is that of any importance?
Well, I heard a story many years ago, and that was, if it ain't chartreuse, it's got no use. Now, I don't really know if that's so true, but I do like chartreuse and white. I like chartreuse and white. I like red and white. I like red and yellow. I've seen some other patterns. I like a peacock pattern where you put the bars on them. I mean, once again, I think lures and flies are made more for us than the fish. The fish are eating. They're going to eat pretty much anything that's moving. Some flash sometimes doesn't hurt to have some flash in the flies.
Okay. So some of these questions, I had a question about, do you mainly fish from shore or the boat? Sounds like all your fishing is pretty much from the boat.
99% is boats, yes.
Yeah, and Dino, you asked about shore fishing. I think we pretty much covered that earlier. Okay, question, how do you approach a new body of water when targeting peacock? What are the first things you look for? Now, you've been doing it so many years. Structure, okay.
Yes, I do know most all. There's not many canals I've not fished at this stage of the game. But I would still go by the basic tool is structure, which would be bridge pilings, rocks, big boulders, points. I would tell you, lily pads and stuff like that, except like you go out in the Everglades and there's lily pads everywhere. So that's not always a great tool to go by. Sometimes you look for a break in a lily pads in that case. There's so many. So, but structures, any kind of structure, and I kid when I say cars and shopping carts and stuff like that, but they are in the canals, especially in the city canals. You'll find lots of shopping carts. You'll find tires under the water, unfortunately batteries and stuff like that. And, yes, I once had a joke about there was this Jeep out in Blue Lagoon Lake down in Miami, and his Jeep was upside down, and we found peacock spawning on the drive shaft. So, by the way, the peacocks do not spawn on soft territory. Their eggs have to adhere to the surface. So they will brush an area off, and their bed is only maybe 6 inches by 6 inches. They make small beds. They don't put a ton of eggs down. That's why I think this species only will spawn a couple times a year, is because they don't do it. They put down about a fifth the amount of eggs that a largemouth bass does, and they also will guard their young up to 2 months after they hatch. Both the male and the female stay full time with them, and that's why I think part of the reason why ours don't get as big, is this particular species survives by reproductive, reproducing much more than the others do. The others, though, in that sense, are more susceptible to pressure compared to ours. Ours they're here forever. Unless we have an ice age, ours are here forever. They're not going to ever leave these waters. I guess if the waters rise up over the banks from the ocean, salt water might kill them off. But most of our exotics are here forever. It's just part of our system.
With what you just said about the beds and the spawning activity, you still don't have a problem with fishing for fish near the beds?
Well, here's the deal. What I've found is, as long as you release them quickly, I'd say at least 75% of the time, they go back to the bed. And yes, they're very good about that. You might not see them right then. You go away for a little bit, come back, you'll see them back over there again. And you can probably catch them again. I won't do that. That's where I draw the line there. And if I got a lot of them on the beds, I'll try to only let somebody fish for one of them, you know, so that makes it a little bit better that way. But in saying that, all these years I've been doing that, I've not hurt their populations. And there's a lot of other guys that do this now. There's a lot of people that fish for them now. There are well-known species down here now, and there's a lot of locals that fish for them. But, you know, and they do the same things. Not all of them, but a lot of them do. Probably the thing that might hurt them the most is once they've hatched and they're guarding their young, I do not like to fish for them then. And the reason is because other fish will come in and will eat
them. The young,
They'll eat the young. And to me, that's more susceptible and does more damage. And people will catch them accidentally. You know, they don't know that they're guarding their young just because they're fishing.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but that's part of it, and they still survive. So, you know, they've done very well down here. It's been a very successful program. And as far as we go, you know, and of course, I've made my living all these years. It was 36, 37 years of fishing primarily for peacock bass. I've made a living at it, and I still can put people on fish. And it's, you know, what makes me happy.
Now, sight fishing versus blind casting. Are you sight fishing most of the time, or is this like a half and half kind of thing?
Depends on the time of year. This time of the year, I'm not doing any sight fishing. There's no reason to. They're out and about. They're chasing. I sight fish because people want to catch fish. They come to me to catch peacock bass, and if the majority of them are spawning, they're not out chasing. So you have to go in and find them. And it's unfortunate that way in that sense. But as long as you're good about it and you get them back to the water quick, they're going to go about their business. I let people take a quick picture. You know, now it's a big one. Unfortunately, that big one might not go back because they're going to keep them out longer. But in saying that, I've still not heard of them. They've done very well. There is no decrease, not from what we're doing. The biggest decrease might be from the water getting poisoned accidentally or something, you know.
The only time you're sight fishing is if they're on the beds. Otherwise, you're blind casting
I do a lot of that, especially if I feel we can do top water. I mean, they're ball to catch on top water. They come up and they hit with such vigor that it just, the cat's meow for me. I mean, anyway, so.
Yeah, and we pretty much talked about the retrieval. You said whether it's a popper or a streamer of some sort is just keep it moving, right? For 99% of the time.
And not a steady move. So it needs to be an erratic move.
Okay.
It's not something, you don't want to just strip it back straight to the boat, or a popper, you don't want to just drag it across the top. You want to pop, pop, pop. Now, what I will say I've noticed sometimes, like with the clouser down below, I've seen many times people, the fish actually rips after it when they go to pull it out, pull the fly out to make their next cast. You'll see that fish flying after it. And so sometimes if I see that happen often enough, I will tell the people, all right, act like you're going to pull it out, and right before you go to pull out, stop. And that fish is coming after it so hot and so much that he can catch. To give you an idea, they are a fish that I can, if I'm using a spinning rod or a bait casting rod, you can figure eight them. If they come in hot after a lure, which they do sometimes, you leave out, it's not a gentle figure eight, it's a violent figure eight. And I'll do it like three times violently so the water's thrashing, and then I pull it straight out, and you'll see the fish nail it. I've done it with riders
like
on the boat.
Muskie's fishing.
Yes, but a little bit more violent. It's not a slow figure eight. It is a violent figure eight. It's weird. It keeps our attention on it. There's something about the sound that keeps them going.
Yeah. Now, before the show, when we were talking, you talked about hook set. You want to talk about hook set now?
Strip strike. So I'll say that 100 times. And if you're used to trout fishing, unfortunately, you're not going to want to. You could try to hit them really hard by setting up that way, but let's face it, the power in a fly rod is not in the rod tip. The power in a fly rod is in the base.
In the butt,
correct. And that's where you get your power from, and that's a strip strike. If you lift the rod up in any way, it's going to be a softer hook set. And yes, you can get away with it sometimes, but I've watched a lot of big fish throw that fly back at us. And admittedly, you work hard to get that fish, and it hurts to see that happen. But again, I've gotten much better about how I handle that. I used to, in my early years, when I was in my 30s and that bit, I pushed people sometimes a little too hard maybe. As you get older, you realize that it's not the way to do it. And if it happens, you just go find another fish and do the best you can.
Well, it's hard to break old habits, you know. If you've been doing something for 20 years and Yeah, and when you go from freshwater to salt, or for peacocks, do they have a hard mouth?
Yes.
They do. Okay.
Similar to a
Yeah.
largemouth, but they do a lot of head shaking, where,
Okay.
largemouth does not shake their head as much as these guys do. And they come out, you'll hear their gills flapping when they come out of the water, when they're jumping.
Wow. And what's the fight like? Do they jump? Do they go
A
deep?
lot of head shaking mixed in with some jumping. Some days they jump a lot, some other days they don't jump a lot. I don't know the answer to that. I'd like to be able to tell you the answer to all those things, but I don't know the answer on everything. I do know that one day they'll do it one way, another day it's another way, and I don't know why. You just, like anything, you go out fishing, you try to figure it out. If I have two guys fly fishing, I'll have one fly fishing with a popper and one fly fishing with a deceiver or a clouser or full greasy fly going down below, to try to
Yeah.
figure out things as fast as you can so that you can make the day more productive.
And what's the best way to fight them?
Oh, keep pressure on them. Don't,
Down
it, you
low?
know, it, no, yeah, I mean, you can bring the rod up, but you just don't want it straight up. Straight up's never good.
Okay.
Line gets soft. You want to keep that line tight. That's the main thing, is you want to keep that line tight, however you do it. And what I've noticed is it's no different with people casting. Some people cast better than other people. Sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes the fish are more active. Sometimes you got to be more perfect. There's no exact science to any of this. You go out there and you do the best you can, and hope for the best. And some days it works really good, and other days, some days you, I got a friend of mine or one of my clients who says, some days you're the bug, and some days you're the windshield. And then, and my saying is, some days you're the bug with the windshield wipers on full blast, smashing you in. So it's just, but that's just the way it goes. I mean, it's there's so many different things, and just can't get too upset with yourself when things don't work out and things don't go right. I have to remind myself of that too sometimes. So.
Well, very well. Well, Alan, unfortunately, we're out of time, and we need to wrap things up here. But stick with me. We're going to be giving away some prizes, and I want you to help me determine who the winner is, and
Okay.
so forth. We're going to be giving away a 1-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a 1-year
Wow.
membership to Trout Unlimited, and we're going to be giving away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. So stick with me for just a couple more minutes and we'll finish things up here.
Okay,
The
sounds great.
Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. And just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link under our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of the show?" Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. But now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you register for the next show so you don't miss out on some of these great prizes we have to give away. And let me get here to where I need to be. But if you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show and get the information from you so that you can collect your prize. So for Fly Fishers International, and let me, I'm a little disorganized here. Give me a second. And get to my right page here. I got so, all right. So for Fly Fishers International, our looks like our winner is Matthew DeMiet in Texas. So Matthew, congratulations. I'm happy you won that membership, and I know you'll enjoy it. And if you don't have a membership and you didn't win tonight, go out to flyfishersinternational.org and check them out, flyfishersinternational.org. Okay, let's see for our Trout Unlimited membership. We have Nathan Dettingmeyer, Nathan Dettingmeyer in Alabama. So congratulations, Nathan. Now you have a you're a Trout Unlimited member. So we'll contact you after the show and get you guys all set up. Now we'll give away a copy of Alan's I mean, a copy, a book from Stackpole Books. Sorry about that, folks. And you'll just have to answer my question here. And let's see, what do we got that's good? Oh, that might be too hard. Anybody? Okay, how about this? Alan mentioned a number of species that are non-native. He gave a specific number. I mean, it's about number, but he only gave one number. How many species are non-native in Florida? So, nope. You didn't wait till I asked the question, Trig. He answered the question, and I hadn't even asked the question yet.
Jumping the gun.
Let's see. Yeah. Well, you know, some of them are like that. It looks like Charles Card from Dutch John, 40, he says. Was that the magic number, Alan?
That was the magic number.
Okay, Charles.
That was correct.
Okay. You are the winner there, Charles, of a book from Stackpole. I have several that I can offer you, so I will send you a list. I've got your email here, and I will send you a list, and then you can pick from that list which book you'd like to have, and I'll ship it out to you. So thanks, everybody, for paying attention and playing and listening tonight. Really always appreciate that. Alan, really appreciate you staying up late there on the East Coast and sharing all your knowledge with us. Yeah, it was lots of fun for me, too, and I know it was for everybody else. But stay healthy down there. Keep those peacocks healthy for us when we come down. And
will do.
We'll get to fish again. All righty. Hopefully you've all found the sure. Hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line menu. In that archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 400 shows. You can search by any keyword and find probably what you're looking for. So check it out. I'm sure you'll be surprised at what you discover. Our next broadcast will be on November 6th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On that show, I'll interview Bart Lombardo, and our show is Passionate About Panfish. Bart is a professional guide in New Jersey and is passionate about panfish. Catch the excitement and join us to learn the best tactics to hook these lively fish, from selecting the right flies to mastering the presentation. Bart shares his top secrets from years of experience. Be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar. Just click on the Add to Calendar button below his picture on our homepage, and you'll be all set. You can add it right to your calendar. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Rico Puglisi Flies for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.